Yes, welcome back to Tuesday's edition of World Football Daily, the best daily football podcast in North America. I'm delighted to be joined by another man that we should have had on before now in 2013. Rafa, I don't know what you're doing with these guest bookings, leaving it so late for our very good friend, Mr. Phil Ball, to join us here on World Football Daily. Phil, how are you doing today, mate?
I'm fine. He was just giving me a rest. No worries.
I think everybody needs it. Although, you know, we had the winter break in Spain, and since coming back, everything's still going, well, very pear-shaped at Real Madrid. Jose Mourinho now blasting Marcelo and Fabio Contrao. They had the loss on the weekend. It's getting from bad to worse for Los Blancos.
Yeah, it's difficult to see how much worse it can get. I mean, even the Ronaldo own goal as well. It's all. One gets the feeling in the sense that you know they might touch rock bottom and it'll look like there's no way back, and suddenly it'll all improve and it'll all seem bizarrely in the past. You know, I don't know. I rather liked Mourinho's comment the other day that when Real Madrid win, it's because the players are doing it themselves, and you know, when they lose, it's his fault. I quite like that. I thought that was quite a good touch by Mourinho. Although you have to say that, you know, really part of the problem has really been created by him, but we don't need to go into that. I think that's fairly obvious. But there have been problems with players, and you know, Marcelo being overweight, and Contrao, of course, has been a bit indisciplined in the past and continues to do so, and it's not helping. But you know, you begin to wonder if the source of authority at the top has begun to weaken, then it begins to show further down. You know, it looks like just basically school cutting discipline. You know.
Well, it does seem very schoolboy kind of mentality from Mourinho at the moment. Is it right that he's calling out his players out in the press? Surely this should just be dealt with behind closed doors.
Well, absolutely, but you know, in the way that the Spanish media deals with football, that's just an impossibility, I think. And the problem is that for the clubs, it's in their interests at times that it's in the public, and they can't have their cake and eat it, really. I think that's the problem in that case. So that's just not going to happen. There were certain clubs, I think Barca and Pasta have been a bit better at the dirty linen thing, but Real Madrid have always been pretty poor at it.
Is this changing the perception around the Real Madrid-Manchester United Champions League tie that's obviously coming up in a week's time? Because when that draw was initially made, people were saying Real Madrid-United, you know, that's going to be an incredible game. But Madrid have been on a poor kind of run of form and not been looking well and haven't really had this, have had this hanging over their head for the last few months now. Whereas United keep just grinding out wins and going from strength to strength. The people in Spain starting to think that Madrid could easily be knocked out by United in this.
I don't know. It's just impossible to say. I mean, as you say, looking in terms of form, United seem to be getting better, don't they? They seem to be not conceding so many goals as they were early on in the season. They seem to be winning well. They've got well clear of Man City. And as you say, Real Madrid go from bad to worse in the league. But you do get the impression also that Real Madrid are sort of losing interest in the league. I mean, they have to kind of put on a face, as it were, but you could see clearly against Granada the body language wasn't there in quite a lot of players, not just the ones you quoted. You know? So, the Champions League's another thing, and they, of course you saw the last Clásico. I thought it was a good game. I thought Madrid played very well, actually, in their own way. I thought they really competed well, and I think when they can see that something's to be won, the motivation seems to come back, and so it is a fantastic occasion. Real Madrid, Manchester United. I wouldn't count them out at all.
Let's hope that it does live up to the occasion. Phil, let's get the top, the two major sides in Spain out of the way, because Barcelona are being given a little bit of a hard time for their defensive follies in recent weeks. They had the loss against Sociedad and drawing with Valencia this week. It's a little hard on Valencia saying that it was Barca defence that let them down, as opposed to Valencia playing very well to get that draw this week.
I think that even when Barcelona were doing fantastically in their record-breaking season, people were still looking for weak points, and they would say things like, you know, if you can get the ball behind Dani Alves, if you can do this, you can do that. That Piqué was a bit slow, Carlos Puyol was getting goals. And if you look at the personnel, it hasn't really changed much, has it? Valdez is still there, although he's not there for too long. And the only real difference at the back is Jordi Alba. You know, I can't see why suddenly the Barcelona defence should have collapsed in ruin. You know, I don't see that. What I think is happening is you saw clearly in the Valencia match that the Valencia just played them at their own game. They pressured them high, and they took a risk in a sense by pressuring them high and playing them at their own game. And it just sometimes pays off. You know, it pays off often when you've got someone like Xavi injured, and maybe Messi's not getting the ball enough because they can't quite do their thing, and suddenly they're under pressure. It happened in the Real Sociedad game as well. I was there. I've witnessed it. It was a fantastic spectacle. Barca didn't play badly in any sense, but Real Sociedad turned it on them by doing exactly what Valencia did. You know, playing a high line. You know, you'll get away with that occasionally against Barcelona, and most of the time you'll get stuffed if you do that, which is what usually happens. But of course, when Barca draw or lose, it's highlighted in this enormous way as if it's somehow a weakness. So I don't know about that, really. To be honest, I don't see any big problems there. They are conceding more goals, yes. But that's only not natural for me. I think that people have just got a little bit more of the measure of them, you know. They're still probably winning the Champions League.
And I guess it doesn't matter if you concede 25 goals at this point in the season, if you scored 72. I think people still need to remember that as well. You're not flying the flag then that the La Liga title fight is back on with Atletico Madrid only 9 points off them now?
Well, it would be interesting, wouldn't it? I mean, I was saying that yesterday to my son. You know, look at Atletico, you know, look at them. I bet everybody's talking about this amazing record this season, but you know, Atletico Madrid isn't bad, is it? They're only 9 points behind them, and that's astonishing, really, for where they've come from so quickly with Simeone. Can they sustain it? Well, you know, if they were 6 points behind, you'd perhaps start saying, yeah, it's possible, isn't it? And yeah, they've got to play each other yet. You know, I don't know. I mean, if you could really imagine Atletico Madrid beating them in the game that's left against them, and then say it was reduced by Barca losing another one, which is perfectly plausible, then Atletico Madrid were able to keep up the consistency, then you'd have a title fight on. That's right. You know, when people say the league is lost, all they mean is that Real Madrid can't win it. I mean, they tend to rather patronisingly dismiss Atletico Madrid's possibilities. But hey, 9 points isn't that much, is it?
Do you think that's been fueling the Atletico Madrid fire this season as well? The fact that, I mean, people do say, oh, Barcelona have got it won because Madrid are so far behind, and everybody just overlooks Atletico sat in that second place, as you say.
Well, I think they did, didn't they? And then suddenly Barca have lost to Real and drawn to Valencia, and this is big news, as I said, and 2 points away from Barcelona, suddenly, can we catch them? It suddenly looks kind of feasible, doesn't it? It's still an enormous task for Atletico Madrid. The task for Atletico Madrid is for them to manage to find that sufficient consistency to keep going and just hope that Barca do drop points, which I think they will, you know. But the thing is that Atletico Madrid historically have been terribly inconsistent. That's what they've put right this season in a remarkable way, really. They look like that side that won the double, you know, in 96. They had Simeone in it, of course. They've got a nice mixture of talented and hard boys in there, you know. That's what I like about them, you know, and that's why, you know, you have to take it seriously, I think. I don't know. Ask me next month and let's see how it goes. You know?
let's look at some of the other sides around La Liga, because there's plenty of news coming out of Mallorca and, of course, out of Sociedad as well. Starting with Mallorca and the sacking of Joaquim Caparrós. Who comes in for the club now? Who takes the reins here? And is there a salvageable season in this for Real Mallorca?
For Mallorca? What they're talking about this morning, I saw the speculation was centering around what's his name, Gregorio Manzano, no? The ex-Mallorca manager was a possibility, and also that they'd been tapping up or thinking about Bernd Schuster. I don't know whether they'd been doing that before Caparrós was actually sacked. I don't think so. I was quite surprised that Caparrós got sacked, to be honest. I think they were a bit unlucky against Real Sociedad. The guy shouldn't have been sent off, and Real Sociedad played very well, but I don't think that was a massive reflection on Mallorca. They have had a terrible season, you have to say.
Yeah, it's not exactly been going well. Do you see there being, though, enough quality still in this side to get them out from the bottom three?
Well, there's the thing. They've lost a lot of quality in the last three seasons. I mean, you're looking back at people like Ibagafa, just not there anymore. You know, I mean, they've lost Choly Castro, of course, to Real Sociedad, and you know, he put salt in the wound by scoring the opening goals. They've lost Guzman as well, haven't they? I mean, they lost some good players. I don't know. It kind of depends on the new manager, but they I think if you asked me to write an article about it, they would be one of my relegation candidates at this moment. Yeah, and it's, as you say, it's a general lack of quality. Yeah, yeah.
One of the sides that was a genuine relegation candidate at one point in this season was Espanyol. Change of manager, and since December they've only lost one game so far, Phil. The turnaround, is it the honeymoon period of a new manager coming in? Is it the squad just needed a lift of a new manager to start getting the best out of it again?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there was anything particularly wrong with the squad. I mean, they had lost a few players as well, but they still got, I mean, Sergio Garcia is a fantastic player. I always really liked him. It's a shame about that dodgy ponytail he's got, but that, he's a great player. And I think Pochettino was a good manager as well. I think what happened there was he just fell out with certain people, and there's all sorts of tales of woe that are coming from the. Well, I don't think it was all Pochettino's fault either. I think it's just the way he operates, and let's see how he gets on with Southampton now. But I think I really was surprised that Espanyol were struggling. Javier Aguirre is an experienced manager. I kind of expected that to happen. I don't think that they're going to challenge for Europe or anything, but I think they'll be comfortable in mid-table. I mean, I saw them play at Real Sociedad, and I thought they looked really good, and that was at their worst time. They beat Real Sociedad 1-0, kind of surprised me, but they didn't look a poor side to me. Not entirely surprised now.
A side that you've mentioned a couple of times now in the last couple of questions, Phil, Real Sociedad, and Iñaki Badiola coming out, the former president, saying that his side were doping during his reign as president. What is going on with this story? Why is this coming out now? And what's Sociedad's reaction been to it?
Well, be careful. That's not quite what he said. He said that the doping had been going on in the period immediately before him taking over. So he's accusing José Luis Astigarraga, who is, of course, as you know, the president of the league, professional Spanish league. He's accusing him of having presided over this period of doping. It's a tricky one. I mean, as you know, I'm on the inside here, and I was talking last night at my son's training session up here in San Sebastian about it, and of course everybody's up in arms. Well, one thing is that Iñaki Badiola is a rather dodgy guy himself. I mean, there's no problem about being taken to court for that statement, because he himself has been taken to court various times by various people since he was kicked out of the Real Sociedad presidency, and he seems to like to go to court. I mean, I just think he likes the lights on him. But why has he done this at this particular time? Well, because the initials RS, Real Sociedad, came out in Dr. Fuentes' list for people who he was supposedly supplying. You know, that obviously he supplied a lot of the Spanish cyclists. I'll take that back. He supplied the Spanish cyclist Contal, who was, of course, found to be guilty, and who pleaded innocent. But also Gurpegi, the athletic Bilbao player, who was banned, as you know, for 2 years. And this is the same guy. So his association with Sociedad has just came out, and so they asked Badiola about this. And Badiola said, "Well, it wasn't under my watch. It was under the previous guy's watch. So why don't you talk to him?" And he said, "I know for a fact that these accounts, when we were looking at them, when we took over, that we saw this. We saw that these payments had been made, and we couldn't account for them." So as you can imagine, the proverbial hit the fan. Astigarraga has denied it, and of course he would do because of his present position. I mean, I can't really say on the phone whether I think it's true or not. I mean, I suppose it could be true, but if it is true, then it's the tip of the iceberg. That would be my way of looking at it at the moment. It's impossible for me to say down the phone, "It's all a lie, it's all false." Astigarraga has to say that to protect himself legally, and if he doesn't, obviously he looks like he's guilty, but it's the tip of the iceberg. It's the same as the Armstrong syndrome, isn't it? It doesn't really matter about Lance Armstrong, it just matters about the other 1,000 cyclists who've been doing the same thing.
How detrimental could it be, though, to Spanish football in general, especially considering the financial problems that it's in right now, to then have some sort of doping, mass doping allegation coming out of the ashes here as well? That could really be bad for the sport.
Well, that's exactly the point. I mean, it's potentially disastrous. I mean, I was just saying at another time to a guy, I said, how many more scandals can actually come out about Spain at the moment? You know, we've got the Partido Popular, the government at the moment is being asked to resign because of financial scandals. There's the doping thing still going on about the athletics as well. That still hasn't really been cleared up. This is actually a part of that. This has actually come out because of that. The operation against the apparent doping in athletics as well that took place in Spain. Plus this, plus that, plus the other. And then, of course, well, Spain actually got off scot-free on this international one that came out yesterday, didn't they? That was just about the only country in Europe that wasn't implicated in this betting scandal. But that's just about the only thing they haven't been implicated in. So, as you say, yeah, very, very serious. And I'm very interested in what's going to happen. There have just been various denials this morning, obviously, from Real Sociedad. But tomorrow we'll see what happens. It's interesting, but I think it's not going to stay with Real Sociedad if it is true, then the rest of the league are going to be, as we say, you know, sweating a little bit.
Let's hope that tomorrow, though, we are talking about Spanish football and obviously Spain taking on Uruguay tomorrow night. No place for Michu, obviously no place for Fernando Torres, but that's a little more explainable. Why do you think Michu hasn't been called up into this side? Is Del Bosque looking to play that false number nine again?
I think that's it, yeah. I was a bit disappointed. I thought I thought he could have given him a go and, you know, encouraged him a little bit. It's rather odd that he didn't. He went to see him, didn't he? He was in the stands. I was watching Match of the Day on BBC and Del Bosque was in the stands watching him. I can't remember the match. Was it Swansea Everton, I think? So he obviously took the bother to go over and watch him, you know, in the flesh. I've really been surprised by Michu. I thought he was a bit of a interesting, lanky, rather clumsy goal scorer. But actually, the more I watch him, the more I think he's just as good as Negredo. Certainly as good as Negredo, as good as Soldado in that position. You know, Orfilia. Who knows? I mean, I think that you always need an alternative as an international side. You need a plan B, and why not have him? As you say, Torres is just awful at the moment, and Michu's great, so why not reward him at least with, you know, a trip with a squad? It would be great for him. I feel a bit sorry for him, really. I mean, what more can you do, you know, than score, what is it, 14 goals in the Premier? But I think, as you say, it's probably that Del Bosque doesn't want to particularly disrupt the false nine system that's worked so well for him, but there's plan B, I'd pick me too.
No Xabi Alonso, no Casillas. How is Spain going to be approaching this game in terms of their mentality and how serious will they be taking this friendly against Uruguay?
Well, I think very seriously, because they'll be scared of Uruguay. Uruguay have got one hell of a side, actually. You know, they've got some interesting players in there themselves, haven't they? And I don't think they can take it very lightly, you know. So, that said, I think what they're looking to do is to give people like Isco a run out, you know, see what he can do in that kind of context, and see what they can do without Xavi as well. Xavi Alonso as well, he's out, isn't he? I mean, there's going to have to be a bit of a rejig in the midfield. Santi Cazorla is obviously going to be very important in that context here, whereas great player though he is, you still really can't consider him as central to the midfield thing, but he will be. Silva's there. I mean, they've still got a fantastic midfield. Mikel Arteta, I think he's probably missed the boat now, hasn't he? This would have been his big chance, wouldn't it? But I think he's missed the boat now. But he'll take it seriously. But he'll experiment. I think he'll play Isco, for example. I think we've got to have a look at him in this context.
Phil, it's an absolute pleasure to have you back on World Football Day today. We've taken up far too much of your time, especially for a busy man like yourself. Really appreciate, though, you coming and spending the 20 minutes with us and having a chat about all things La Liga today, mate.
No worries, it's my pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to have you on, and best of luck following Grimsby as they look to get that final automatic promotion spot in the conference as well, mate.
That's what I want. Okay.
Have a very good afternoon, mate.
Okay, bye-bye, ciao.
Cheers, Phil. Phil Ball there, joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things La Liga. Was having a little chat about the conference football with Phil earlier. He's a very happy man about his Grimsby side. Raf, we've managed to pick two very happy guests. Grimsby getting a 4-2 win on the weekend, and Fiorentina coming on as well with their win on the weekend. both our two guests, Phil Ball and Giancarlo Rinaldi, extremely happy and almost delighted to be on the show. Fantastic indeed. And it's always a pleasure to have Phil coming on and chatting things La Liga with us.
Like the true good manager that I am, you know, I'm a wonder man manager here.
You're picking your informed players here, Raf. I think that's
exactly. I pick my players when they are at their peak and ready to perform. And you know, these guys just come in and deliver.
They what deliver. Kind of- always deliver, though, man. Whether it's rain or snow, sleet or sunshine, Phil Ball and Giancarlo Rinaldi, two people that always deliver for us here on World Football Daily. An absolute pleasure to chat with him and a little bit about the Spain-Uruguay friendly coming up as well. We're going to take a very quick break here on WFD. And when we come back, we're going to be wrapping up the rest of the show, finding out what Rafa was doing yesterday with a microphone, pestering people again, and everything else, getting ready for Wednesday's show. And, of course, the international games coming up tomorrow night. We'll be back in just a moment here on WFD.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews, and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.